This afternoon, I'm talking to Luke Taylor. He's the Liberal Democrat MP for Sutton and Cheam and also the spokesperson for London. Welcome back to Radio Jackie, Luke, and thank you for talking to me this afternoon. Can we talk about your new economic growth plan in Sutton and what it entails? And is it in response to the budget, which did very little to help the High Street?
No, you're absolutely right. The budget was really disappointing in terms of hospitality, and really the big issues that we face in our town centres that the Liberal Democrats had come up with a plan to address through a 5% cut to VAT to support hospitality in the High Street in the run up to Christmas. The Chancellor wasn't listening to us, and we didn't see that in there. We also didn't see any support for the High Street. And in fact, well, the way that the business rates and the revaluations are going to work together is actually going to be a real hit for our hospitality. The Sutton Growth Plan that we launched last week, actually something slightly separate. It's really very much about bringing the attention to how much opportunity that we've got in Sutton to bring in businesses to really capitalise on the London Cancer Hub development that is going forward and hopefully will be coming to Planning Committee in February, where we're going to be producing a huge amount of lab space. I think there's about £1 billion worth of investment on the facility at the Royal Marsden site, where you've got the Maggie Centre and you've got the Institute of Cancer Research at the moment. And so it's really just being really positive about the opportunities that we've got there. We've got development happening in the town centre. We're providing 3,000 new homes are either in the approved development pre-approval or design phase, which will bring a whole load of opportunity for businesses. Not only that's new customers for high street stores, that is residents that can work in the borough. It's just a really huge opportunity at the moment for businesses to come to Sutton. So the council is doing everything we possibly can to let businesses, let individuals know what opportunities there are in Sutton and try and make a success of that, because we don't seem to be getting any help from the government. London generally was really disappointed with the budget. So Sutton Council, the Lib Dems here in Sutton, are standing up and trying to be as proactive as we possibly can, working with the High Street Business Improvement District team, working with the Institute for Cancer Research as well, and really trying to make a big thing about why people should come to Sutton.
So, going back to the budget and your thoughts on the budget, why do you feel it's let London down so badly? Very little to help small businesses, nothing on Hammersmith Bridge. What do you think should or could have been done?
Well, I would like to hear London at least once in the entire budget, which was conspicuous by its absence. Now, there were parts of London mentioned, but I think the point was that the government really doesn't recognise the opportunity and the potential that London has to drive economic growth across the country. You mentioned Hammersmith Bridge, real omission, not mentioning any money to get that vital transport artery reopened. There was no mention for funding for the DLR extension in East London. It said that they'd be supportive of it, but the funding would have to come separately, which was really disappointing. What I think we have is a lack of ambition for London from this government. I think it comes down to a lot of complacency on Labour's behalf. In many places around London, they've got Labour councillors, Labour council, they've got assembly members, they've got the MP, and they've got the London mayor. And there just isn't that appetite to try and push more, push forward, and actually get that money invested, get the regulations torn up for these Brexit red tapes that so many of our businesses are dealing with, particularly in London. And really, I think Labour are very complacent about their position in London. And hopefully, shouting from out here in Sutton, where we've shown that we don't need Labour to make a success of our borough, and the two MPs here in Sutton, I think we're doing a very good job to prove that. Hopefully, Labour will feel a little bit of pressure from us, and next May in the local elections, hopefully we'll have a little bit of a an opportunity to show that Liberal Democrats can work hard across London, so that we do get that attention. And we do see the moves that London wants to see. Biggest one of those is the huge amounts of red tape that Brexit have caused us. We calculated, the Liberal Democrats found this figure from some research that was done that Brexit is costing our economy and costing the government £90 billion worth of income a year from lost revenue into the government. That's £1.7 billion a week. Now, we saw these big red buses with let's send £350 million to our NHS instead of Europe every week. Now, we now learn that it's £1.7 billion worth of cost of Brexit. Now, the Liberal Democrats were the only party talking about this. We've said that with a bespoke customs union deal with Europe, we could see an increase in a tax intake of £25 billion a year. That's the tax take. That's a huge boost for public services. But that also means fewer red tape for businesses. It means more trading with our European neighbours, and those are good things. And unfortunately, Labour aren't talking about it. But you've also got reform, and you've got the Conservatives who are actively campaigning against that. You've got them actively saying, no, we should be keeping these barriers up. We should be turning away from our European neighbours. And unfortunately, they are talking down London, and they're removing the opportunities and the solutions to actually fix so many of the problems we see today.
Just recapping on the Marsden and the plans to close the children's unit at the Royal Marsden Hospital and move services to the Evelina. Have you had any thoughts on that or had any feedback of where that's going and when it's going to happen and how it's going to happen?
Has gone very, very quiet. My understanding is work is still continuing at the Evelina to prepare for the change. There's no change in plan as far as I'm aware. I know there's a lot of very delicate work to be done with patient groups, with families, and ensuring that all the support services that they rely on are able to be replicated at the Evelina, so that when the change does occur and once the facilities are constructed at the Evelina on the South Bank, that's ready to go. There's a lot of work still to be done there. It's a good reminder for me, actually, Jackie. I'll go away and I'll try and find some updates. So the next time we talk, I could give you a bit more of a positive update.
Have you spoken to current patients who have children being treated in the Marsden, how they would feel if they had to move across London with a sick child to for that child to be treated at the Evelina?
Yeah, and this is the thing, Jackie, and you make the case really strongly that patients are worried about the change, and naturally you are going to be, and that's really got to be balanced against the NHS, who feel that the clinical outcomes would be improved in that situation. So it is a really delicate balance, and as a politician, I want to be really careful that I am standing up for patients and residents and doctors and nurses who might work at the Marsden, and that huge workforce out into Surrey that can access the hospital today. They can get to work. They can, they have a pattern and a kind of a system set up for that. That relocation, the NHS tells us, will give better clinical outcomes, but will cause a whole set of other issues around accessibility, around the impact on families of that extra time taken to get there. So it is a really delicate balance, and unfortunately there aren't any easy answers on this, but it's definitely something that we're still looking at and trying to work out how we respond to and how we support parents and patients in that transition.
Do you think moving the Marsden to the Evelina is the right one?
A really difficult one. It was a surprise when those recommendations came out. Again, I'm really nervous about getting involved in clinical decisions, but it is absolutely my job, though, to scrutinise things and to respond to residents and constituents who get in touch with me with their concerns, to make sure that those issues are raised and that we get proper answers to it. So the whole project to relocate the Children's Cancer Services, it has been a long and ongoing one. There have been lots of options considered. We do need to make sure we're getting the best for local residents. What I will do is I'll try and get an update on where that is up to. But as I said, it is not my understanding that there's any change in plan. It's just about the progress to get the physical infrastructure at the Evelina built, and also all the partnerships they need and support services they need, so that patients and their families can be properly supported.
So thank you for that. Can we go on to the Angelini inquiry? You're saying it's missed opportunities to tackle violence against women and girls. What more needs to be done? And can you explain the inquiry and what it was looking into?
Yeah, so it was in response to the horrific incident that we saw with Wayne Cousins and Sarah Everard and the death of Sarah Everard, and how police forces needed to get their act in gear in screening and holding officers to account who, frankly, in many situations shouldn't even have been officers in the first place. So they examined how forces respond to accusations of sexual offences and how they then deal with getting those guys out of the force. And it found that I think only 25% have implemented the steps that are recommended to deal with these sorts of complaints. And again, the inquiry showed that just quite simply not enough has changed, that the risks still exist, that there are too many men in the police service that should not be there. So our call when that was released was to put the pressure on the Metropolitan Police, particularly, and that's my hat at the Met Police, but I'm sure that there are police forces around the country that have these same problems. But for particularly for me, the Met Police need to really get on with the job of putting these processes in place so that people who should not be police officers in the first place are kicked out at the earliest available opportunity before they can become a danger to women in and around London.
Has the Met combined resources and information with other police units around the country so that they can pool their discoveries and their findings?
Well, and I think that's what the report revealed, that that wasn't happening. So it was saying that there wasn't a common approach. Each force, understandably in some ways, but frustratingly in others, approached the problem quite differently. And that would have been down to individual leadership choices. It would have been down to resources. It would have been down to a culture. And in some ways, it's right that they have this opportunity to try and deal with it in their own way. But actually, what it means is you don't get that uniform achievement. You don't get that joined up approach, as you say. And I think the Met Police was one of those that was, highlighted as really not doing enough. Whereas in some other places around the country, they had done a much, much better. What I think it does is it highlights how all of our police forces are lacking the resources they need to do the job properly. You and me have spoken repeatedly about the cuts in Met Police officers and staff. When you are cutting staff anyway, the ability to get rid of the staff who shouldn't even be there becomes even more difficult because you've got even higher turnover. You don't have the resource to go through these investigations. And it's just really disappointing that the government isn't doing everything they can to provide the resources for the Met Police to kind of get rid of the staff that just shouldn't be there in the first place.
And the cuts don't help, do they?
Exactly. It removes their ability to, cut out those bad apples before they spoil the whole barrel.
And you can't judge a bad apple in a particular institution and judge the institution on that bad apple. As far as the Met's concerned, they do a great job, don't they? Officers are under a lot of pressure themselves with all the crimes going on, and they themselves suffer from mental health problems and they need support on that, don't they?
Don't forget that they do an incredible job. We do have a drop in crime rate in London. We do have murders at an all-time low, at least in recent history. And that means that what they are doing is working well. What is often a challenge is the fear of crime. So it is absolutely true that crime levels are going down, but the fear of crime is going up. Now, that's for lots of reasons. Many of the crimes that we see proliferating are very visible crimes. So it's shoplifting, it's antisocial behavior, it's disruption on the high street, it's things that you see and also are then shared. So you get videos circulating on social media. So people see a lot more now. People talk about it on local social media, or on Nextdoor, on Facebook, on their kind of community hubs. And whilst it doesn't, I am not saying in the slightest that there isn't a problem, a lot of the challenge is down to the fear of crime. I think I was on the high street in Sutton yesterday with the police, doing an operation cracking down on illegal e-bikes being ridden on the pedestrianised areas. And the police officer, I knew the first fact, which was that Sutton is one of, if not on some measures, the safest borough in London. But he also said that in some categories, it has the highest fear of crime. So whilst crime levels in Sutton are the lowest in London, the fear of crime is some of the highest. And the how you kind of square that circle a little bit, that people are much less likely to be victims, but they are more scared of crime, is a really tricky one. And I think it's something that the government and the police themselves and politicians like me have a lot of responsibility on, because we do hear particular commentators and particular MPs talking about how London is lawless and crime is out of control, and that's just not true. However, what it does is it makes people worried about it. They look out for police officers. They look out on their social media, on their phones, actively going out and kind of seeing problems and searching for fights and violence and crimes. And that then kind of adds to that issue around the perception. So again, there is no suggestion that there isn't a challenge, and we do need to keep on cracking down on antisocial behaviour and shoplifting and issues on our streets. Violence against women and girls, as the Angelini inquiry really showed, is still a huge problem. The difference between the cold facts on crime rate and the perception and fear, is really difficult, and that in of itself is a problem, and it's a problem that we all need to take quite seriously and come up with real major steps to help reassure people.
So thank you, Luke, for today. But can we wind this up with a Christmas message from yourself to your constituents and the Radio Jackie listeners?
Well, I absolutely do, and something that we've been doing in my office over the last couple of weeks is supporting a local business who've been doing a program where they're providing free Christmas trees for families in need. We met Jamie McGregor of Green Earth Gardens at an awards for local the Checker Trade Awards for tradesmen. He won the National Award for Landscaper of the Year, and he told me about this program that he'd run last year. So he raises money from his clients, and then uses that money to pay for Christmas trees that he provides free of charge to families in need. So we partnered with him. We've got local community food kitchen, the Home Start team, and another local charity who deal with families in need, publicising the offer, matching him up with families that need that extra support, and we've been helping him get those Christmas trees into families who really need that extra help with Christmas cheer. So I think the Christmas message generally is about how we are thankful for those families who are in the situation where they are surrounded by family and friends, but we also need to remember all of those who need that extra little bit of help, who need that Christmas tree, to help them kind of enjoy Christmas, and young kids to feel a little bit more Christmassy. So, I want all of my constituents to get that time off, get a bit of relaxation with loved ones and friends. But if you are alone, then please let your councillors, your MPs know, if there's anything we can do to assist, but also that we are thinking of you, and that we do know that it is difficult for many people, because Christmas is about hope. And I think we all need a little bit of hope right now. It's what gets me out of bed and working hard for local residents every day. But don't give in to the doom and gloom. Things are looking up. Next year, you get a new start. You get an opportunity to go out and make a better shot of it next year. But please do reach out. Everyone should feel that they can reach out for help and support when they need it. And I know myself, my other colleagues in Parliament of all parties, and your local councillors, local charities and volunteers groups will always be there to help you if you need that assistance in any way.
Luke, that's an absolutely lovely message. A very happy Christmas to you. I look forward to speaking to you in 2026. Have a happy new year. And let's hope 2026 brings some joy to us all and good prospects. Thank you again, Luke.
Thank you, Jackie. Happy Christmas and New Year to you too.